And then another one was from an exec who was on an expense account, and he wanted to have a meeting up in his room at the Wynn. Now, everyone knows the Wynn is charging high, and they get away with it because they really are such a really great organization. It's for the high rollers and the highest of society who can pay. But the guy had two carafes of iced tea up to his room. It was room service, $155.
What? Two carafes of iced tea.
Yeah, and this guy
not spiked, just non-alcoholic iced tea.
Iced tea. I don't even know if it included a lemon, you know?
Welcome once again to Low Rollers. I am your host, Casino Report Senior Editor Eric Raskin, and I want you to know that I have never shaved points, never left a game early due to fake injury, and never intentionally thrown a pitch in the dirt. All of my sports failures are due to genuine athletic shortcomings. Have I ever mentioned on this podcast that I briefly tried wrestling in middle school and once got pinned in 7 seconds? True story. And the mob didn't tell me to do it. Anyway, thanks as always for listening. Please subscribe. Please give Low Rollers a 5-star rating, all that good stuff. Coming up on the show this week, a tremendous interview, one of my favorite people in this business, Anthony Curtis, the publisher of Las Vegas Advisor, also the head of Huntington Press, which back in 2014 published a little book called The Moneymaker Effect. Anthony's going to join me to give his take, the boots on the ground perspective about what's going on in Vegas, whether the city is in as bad a shape as some people think it is. Plus, we'll talk about the blackjack ball, about his disdain for Halloween, about where the bargains are in Vegas, and a lot more. But first, instead of a quick angle on a big news story to start the pod, I'm going to say a little something about the ridiculous volume of news in the gambling industry these days. Whoever first said the phrase, "May you live in interesting times," clearly did not live in interesting times and did not know how much it sucks to live in interesting times. There's just so much news these days. Here's just the past week, okay? Right before I sat down to record last week's pod, we had the Penn-ESPN bet split just in time for me to slip in a partially formed thought on that a week ago. Then an hour later, ESPN announced a new deal with DraftKings. Then Google announced it was integrating Kalshi and Polymarket data. Then New York set a single-month record for betting handle. Then Damon Jones pled not guilty in the NBA sports betting case. Then DraftKings set out a rough timeline on offering sports prediction markets through its new DraftKings Predictions. Then the NCAA revealed that 6 college basketball players were involved in point shaving or prop shaving. Then the 2 Cleveland Guardians pitchers were indicted for purposely throwing errant pitches, and the indictments revealed just how little money they threw their careers away for. Then Profit X announced it was switching from sweeps to prediction markets, its second complete pivot in the last year or so. Then a California judge sided with Kalshi over the Tribes, for now. Then DFS Plus operator PrizePix announced a deal with prediction market operator Polymarket. Then FanDuel went a step further than DraftKings and revealed in which specific month, December, it plans to start offering sports prediction markets on FanDuel Predict. Then Prime Sports filed for bankruptcy, apparently in order to restructure. Then FanDuel left Nevada over the state's ultimatum regarding operating prediction markets. This was all in a span of 6 days, and I assume that as I'm recording this podcast segment right now on Thursday morning, some other massive news is going down. It's too much. It's ridiculous. I shouldn't complain. I have a job in journalism in 2025. I very much do not hate my job. At times, I might even say I like my job. So these are big-time first-world problems, me complaining that the pace of the job and of the breaking of news is a pain in my ass. But still, I miss the good old days when the big news was something like an Iowa representative introduces a bill to legalize mobile sports betting, and then we're going to spend the next 3 months watching that slowly wind its way through the system. So, okay, the Mega Millions jackpot for Friday night sits at $965 million, very nearly $1 billion. I realize that may sound at first like a non sequitur, but this information is relevant because I plan to win that jackpot and not have to care one bit about the pace of the gambling news cycle ever again. It's not a foolproof plan, but it's the best plan I have going right now. All right, enough of that. Let's get to this week's interview. Please enjoy a few seconds of music, and when I come back, I'll be joined by the one and only Anthony Curtis. When you think of people who are synonymous with Las Vegas, you probably think Elvis, you think Wayne Newton, maybe you think Howard Hughes or Steve Wynn. Well, my guest this week, he's probably going to accuse me of laying it on too thick by saying this, but when I think of Las Vegas, one of the first people I think of is Anthony Curtis. As a journalist, he's certainly the first person I think of when I'm looking for a quote about something going on in Vegas. And we're about to get lots of quotes out of him because he's joining me now on the Low Rollers podcast, the publisher of the Las Vegas Advisor, the Blackjack Hall of Famer. Anthony Curtis, welcome. Thanks for coming on the pod.
All right, Eric, you got me up there with Elvis, huh? Oh, man. You better drop me a few notches, but
I'm just putting you in the same conversation as Elvis, maybe a level below, but, you know, same paragraph, at least for me.
Yeah, at least I'm still in the room, right?
That's true. You got an edge on Elvis there. Yeah. So the main thing I want to talk about is the state of your city, the state of business and life in Vegas. Sometimes I'm seeing dire statistics. Other times I'm seeing representatives of the city or big casinos there saying everything is fine. It's all overblown. How does it feel on the ground as a resident? Is the sky falling?
No, it's not really. And, you know, I'm not an apologist for Vegas in any way. I think that the mistakes they've made that have led to reduced visitation have been egregious. They've made some big errors. But people keep coming. It's amazing. Now, certainly numbers are down. They're down for a lot of reasons. You know, the pandemic euphoria has worn off. The economic uncertainty just with everything, you know, now we've got the fallout from the shutdown, which I guess is not a shutdown, but you still got airlines with problems. And as big as anything has been the gouge, you know, especially on the Strip, which you've heard about, and guilty of all those things. But I'll be darned if the places still, especially on weekends, just aren't jam packed because people just can't get enough of it. You know, it's like they'll keep eating it. As long as you keep feeding them and they're eating it, you're going to keep feeding them. And they're finally starting to look around. By they, I mean the bosses of the casinos, going, look, we've gone a little bit too far. So I think we're on the verge of seeing some good things for the customer coming up. But yes and no. You know, yes, it is down. No, it's not dangerous down.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the gouge is certainly the, you know, some of this stuff is beyond anyone's control in Vegas, you know, what happens with the state of the economy, things that are kind of beyond your control. But the gouge is the thing that people can point to the power brokers in Vegas and say, you went too far and it's turning people off. Are you starting to see like a reverse of that, things are, people in charge are now looking for ways to cut the prices and make it more appealing to the person who's on a little bit of a budget?
Yeah, most of them are. You know, that in the Las Vegas Advisor, we wrote way back in March, the lead story was a hamburger in Vegas. That was what it was called. Okay. And what it was we saw, you know, like take hamburgers, for example, you know, you just almost couldn't find a hamburger anywhere in Vegas for under $10 anymore. So many of them, it used to be a $20 hamburger was like, oh my God, can you believe this? Now it's almost the norm, especially in the strip casinos. Well, out of the blue, Station Casinos comes out with a $5.99 24/7 burger and fries. And we said, uh-oh, that says something. Because, you know, if you're going to talk about the evil empires, you know, you're talking Caesars, you're talking MGM and Station, and to a degree Boyd, who want to be like them. And they were getting everything they could. You know, Station wasn't giving anything away. And all of a sudden, Station's got a $5.99 burger. All of a sudden, Station's got a $1.99 margarita. And that was the beginning. That was like foretelling that there was going to be problems. Then we started to see those problems. Now we're seeing others follow suit. You know, Tuscany just came out with cheap burgers and things. Ellis Island, which has always been sort of a bastion of value, but they come out with their own $5.99 burger. That's better than the Station burger. So we're starting to see what, you know, kind of made Vegas famous. Way, way back, I wrote a book called Bargain City, and that was the name of my book about Las Vegas, Bargain City. And it certainly has gone away from that, and because they could. And now right. I think they're going to tilt back. They're starting to tilt back toward value a little bit.
But even at the height of the price gouging, was it still a case where if you know, certain places on the Strip, it's going to be insanely expensive, but if you knew where to go, there was always ways to do Vegas in an affordable manner?
100%. I mean, you hit it right on the head. There's all it's always been Bargain City to a degree. There's always been a place or places in Vegas you can go. You know, in the Las Vegas Advisor, we have the top 10 every month. And I mean, this is, you know, still $9.99 steak dinner at Ellis Island, dollar beers at Stage Door, right, you know, one block off the strip. And then these are bottles of beers, not little cups. You know, $2 shrimp cocktail at Slots of Fun. You just have to know where it is. So these have always been there. And those who, you know, they go to the strip, they have to go to the strip, they have to stay on the strip, they have to, you know, they don't go out. Well, they get what they pay, you know, what they bargain for by doing that. You've got to go take advantage of downtown, you know, the local places, Boulder Highway, some of the local bars, you know, things like that. Absolutely. Vegas can still be the biggest bargain city in the world. It's just not so obvious anymore.
Right. In terms of some of the ways that the costs went up, I'm curious which side of it bothered you personally more, the crazy fees and prices on the non-gambling stuff, or what we saw on the casino floor with the 6 to 5 blackjack and the 000 roulette and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, you would think I would say the gambling because, you know, that's really where I, you know, make my money. I make my
Right.
money. You know, the advisor, it's funny. It's really, people are like, well, it's all about bargains, but no, there's a lot of gambling in there. And the thing about the gambling is you can always get around that because of you know, you can get away from 000. You can find the 00. You can find the single zero. You can find $5 tables. You know, I don't like the fact that you just, they're so hard to find anymore, you know, and like the $15 is the new $5, you know, especially on the strip. And some of these places, $25 minimums, that's ridiculous. But you can
Right.
walk, you know, vote with your feet, walk out of there, go find another. What bothered me the most really was food prices. I just always loved the great value and bargain on food overall, and the way food prices went up like crazy. Of course, the fees are horrible, you know, the fees that they slip in. Paying for parking is horrible. But again, don't pay for parking. You know, go to places, you can go to places on the strip that don't charge for parking. You know, Treasure Island, Sahara, you know, Casino Royale, there are places even on the strip where you can park and get to where you want to go. So I really don't have a lot of sympathy for people who don't do their homework, don't buy the advisor, right? You know, where they wouldn't know
Right.
where to go, or, you know, listen to your shows and things like this. I don't have sympathy for those people. But yeah, I was aggravated by the rising prices and the costs, sure.
Yeah, as far as the food prices, I come to Vegas somewhat frequently, but always on someone else's dime, always that I'm there for work. And for some of my trips a couple of years ago when it was Showtime paying my way for boxing coverage, they would give me a per diem to spend on food. And it was a perfectly nice per diem, $100 a day for food. And sometimes it was hard to stay under that. If I was at a strip hotel, it was hard to get 3 meals for $100. That's how crazy the prices were getting.
Oh, well, you know, there are so many examples of just lunacy. And I mean, in the last advisor, I couldn't help it. You know, I had to put a couple of them in. One of them was two, you know, this was at Eataly at Park MGM, two ice cream cones, $44.
Wow.
Give me a break, right?
Right.
And then another one was from an exec who was on a sp expense account. And he wanted to have a meeting up in his room at the Wynn. Now, everyone knows the Wynn is charging high and they get away with it because they really are such a really great organization. It's for the high rollers and the, you know, highest of society who can pay. But the guy ordered two carafes of iced tea up to his room. It was room service, 155. This guy
Two
couldn't.
carafes of iced tea.
Yeah. And this guy
Not
was on.
spiked,
Yeah.
just non-alcoholic iced tea.
Iced tea. I don't even know if it included the lemon, you know. And this
Yeah.
guy said he couldn't take it. He was on an expense account. He wasn't paying for it. He said, take it back. He said, I'm not paying that. Take it back. So, yeah,
Wow.
it gets to the, you know, ludicrous levels. And that's just, you know, that's just stupid. And then the town gets what it deserves if it's going to do that kind of crap.
Yeah, wow, that's crazy. They had a conversation about a month ago on the Bill Simmons podcast. I'm not sure if you listened to it, but they were talking about what's wrong with Vegas, and a lot of what they had to say was obvious stuff. But they did throw out one interesting notion that I hadn't really thought about, that Vegas used to be so unique. It had all the casinos and gambling, which other cities didn't have, and it didn't have sports teams and all that stuff that other cities do have. Now, casinos are in lots of cities, and Vegas has an NFL team and an NHL team and more coming. Do you buy that part of Vegas's problem, and I know you're saying it's not, the sky isn't falling, but things are down a little at least. Part of Vegas's problem is it doesn't stand out from other cities quite enough anymore.
I don't think so much. I think Vegas still does stand out, to be honest with you. And I think that you could extend that and say when people have get fed up or they're worried about their own economics, you know, how much money do they have to really to spend on a vacation, then it's much easier now for them to go, okay, we don't have to go to Vegas. We can go to the Detroit casinos if you're in Michigan, or we can go to the Indian casinos there as well, or we can go to in Mississippi to the coast or to the river. You know, they have these alternatives, but they still do want to come to Vegas. And I will still, even though I'm always railing on Vegas and doing things wrong, I will still defend it as a place that has a million different things to do, always reinventing, always coming up with new things. So I don't quite buy into that, maybe just slightly. But again, I think it was self-imposed. You know, the gouge more than
Right.
anything else is what it's turning people off to this town. We get a lot of letters and emails from people going, I've been coming for 20, 25 years. I'm not coming back because
Right.
I felt like I was being mugged from the minute I got off the plane. And that's just no good.
Right.
You know, you go back to the casino. They used to make the formula was give them a great loss leader, make them feel happy, rob them in a casino, you know, and by
Yeah.
robbing them, you know, I mean, the casino edge is working all the time on 99.999% of people, you know, who don't really understand. So they're getting their money there. Now they're taking that hammer out of their hands because they're making the minimum so high that people don't even want to sit down and play. So they can't get it there. And I think they're making a huge mistake. You know, I think they need to have $5 tables. They need to have $3 tables because nature takes its course and people will play way more than those minimums. But you know, I'm not running the joints, and I just witness it, but the numbers tell a tale, you know.
Right. If they did have $5 tables available, is that cheap enough that they would let you sit down and play blackjack? Or you're still, even a $5 table, they're not letting Anthony Curtis play?
Well, that's so stupid, but no, they wouldn't. It might be that it's been so long now, it's been decades now since I've been told I'm not allowed to play, that they might not even remember who the hell I am. But I've fooled around a few times, and I've had people come up and go, "You're not supposed to play." They're nice, you know, like I'm an ATM machine. I can just take money out at any time. You know, I'm an ATM machine. One time, I was doing a documentary out of Italy, and I was supposed to play at the at Harrah's. So I came, you know, with money to play, and they were going to shoot it, and the boss came running out. He goes, "We're not playing live money." And I said, "It's for a documentary, man." I go, "You know, whatever." He goes, "No, we're not doing it." He goes, "We'll settle up at zero at the end of the thing." I
Wow.
lost 18 out of 23 hands. I looked at the guy, I said, "Hey, thanks." I
Yeah.
mean, I got blitzed. It wasn't good for the documentary. They're just watching me lose, you know. But I mean, it's like people have a very wrong, inflated idea about what a small edge will do, you know.
Right. One other topic in terms of something going on in Vegas right now. Our mutual friend and writer David McKee has some serious skepticism about the Bally's Casino next to the ballpark getting done. I think some people are even wondering about the ballpark itself. How confident are you that the ballpark gets built, the A's move to Vegas, all that, and then the Bally's Casino on top of it?
Yeah, I'm not confident. You know, McKee he's a great writer. He's got a dour view of a lot of different things, and this is one of them. There are a lot of people on the side that it's never going to happen, and there's just so many pieces to this that haven't been put in place yet. And you know, my office, you've been to my office, we're right around the corner across the street from the Rio. And the Rio was a candidate. Now that would be perfect for a baseball stadium. I would love it. I mean, that would be great for me, you know, while pulling a hot dog. But I just Bally's is overextended from everything I can see. They're overextended. They're all over the place. They spent a lot of money fast on things that didn't really come to fruition for them. So there's two components. Can Bally's build this thing? and can they get all of the taxation and everything straight on the baseball park, they're actually doing something there. We've been reporting for months and months that nothing's happening. They're moving things, they're digging, they're putting in foundations. So somebody's paying for something somewhere. If I had to, I mean, what do I make it? I make it real close to pick 'em that it happens or not. I can't say that either side is a favorite. I've got no crystal ball on this one. If you put my feet to the flames, I had to do it, I'd say it's going to fall apart.
Okay. So this is my second episode in a row interviewing someone who was at the blackjack ball. Last episode I had on my former co-host Jeff Edelstein, who was at his first ever blackjack ball. I know you've been to plenty of them. Two questions: how was this year's compared to others, and what was your costume, since this was a dress-up blackjack ball?
Well, first of all, Jeff should have come over and said hello.
Right.
I'll tell you what, I was a little bit immobile at this blackjack ball. I got some knees that are waiting for new knees, I think. So that was a little rough. But this ball was as good as any of them. I mean, it was a spectacle, you know, with all the different things they did. I got Halloween right up there with Groundhog Day for importance.
Okay.
I hate it, but I'll tell you, you see these brilliant minds that are like children when it comes to, oh, I get to wear a costume. Oh my gosh, it's Halloween. So I had to wear some kind of a costume or I was going to be at a disadvantage in some of the games because you were penalized if you didn't have a costume. So okay. I walked around with an iron that you iron pants with, and I told people I was Iron Man. That was it.
And just in your normal outfit otherwise, head to toe, other than carrying an iron.
I'm not a costume guy, but
no Halloween spirit.
No, none at all. But I did carry an iron around. But it was great. I saw, you know, they have there's three main components of it aside from the show itself, and all the great people are there. The James Grosjeans and you know, guys like Jelko and Benter, people that people wouldn't know, but these guys have become billionaires off of gambling, you know, going from blackjack to horse racing and things like that. John Chang, who was, you know, the Kevin Spacey character in Bringing Down the House or the movie 21. You know, just Richard Munchkin, that people have known forever and ever. There's just so many people there. And Max Rubin, of course, who runs the whole thing and has for years. So to see those people is quite a spectacle. But they induct somebody into the Hall of Fame every year. This year, it was one of my authors from Blackjack Apprenticeship, Colin Jones. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. Then they have a card counting contest for speed. And that was won by Daryl Purpose, who used to play with Ken Houston's team. And everyone for decades has said that Daryl is the fastest card counter in the world. And he proved it. And he won it going through an entire deck and naming the last three cards in 11.3 seconds.
Wow.
It was amazing. I didn't compete because my date was late. Thank God I didn't have to compete against that. So I didn't get into the competition because I couldn't have done it that fast. And then there's the skills contest. And that's where we really see some of the new players coming up. The guy that won it, I've never heard of him, seen him before. Didn't use his name. He just had EV on his thing, EV for expected value. And some of the things he did with, you know, memorization and cutting the cards was just absolutely phenomenal. So there's just, you know, the new group, the new guard comes up and you just watch it happen. It's quite amazing.
Well, one name that you didn't mention that was ended up being sort of the centerpiece of the story that Jeff wrote about it is Ed Thorpe. And Jeff wrote about how there was basically like a giant receiving line of people wanting to meet him and thank him. Were you in that line? Did you talk to Ed Thorpe? Is he someone that you give some responsibility for you getting into this career?
Ed's the man, you know what I mean? Shame on me for not mentioning Ed in that. Ed was the absolute center of the whole thing. And I'm fortunate to have known Ed for a long time and be friends with him. So I didn't have to get into the line. I saw him right before at the Hall of Fame dinner. And Ed's the reason that it's there. You know, he's the reason that it all began. And just a brilliant guy in his 90s now. You'd never know it. Just on top of it all the way. Great physical condition. And Beat the Dealer was the thing that started it all. And of all of the names that I mentioned, all the people there, nobody's on the level of Thorpe. Nobody.
And would you say in his 90s, better knees than yours, if you had to guess?
Yes, absolutely. Anybody who can get 10 yards without hobbling's got better knees than mine.
I don't know if this is something that you have thought about before or ever do think about, but any guess what you'd be doing with your life if not for Ed Thorpe? If you'd never gotten into blackjack, do you sometimes think about what other direction you would have gone?
I never think of that, but you're making me think about it. Can't imagine anything else. But if I hadn't gone into blackjack, it would have been something that had to do with probability. You know, it would have been finance or something, because these were things that I was always interested in. I was always a game player. I played games with the grown-ups from, you know, playing Pinochle when I was 4 and 5 years old, you know, sitting around while my cousins were out playing with army men. I was sitting and watching Pinochle games so I could play with the grown-ups. And when I was in 11th grade, a guy gave me a book on blackjack, and that's where it turned me in that direction. But if I had never gotten that book, I'd have probably discovered it on my own. But if I had never discovered blackjack or gambling and realized gambling was beatable just like any other thing in finance, I'd have probably ended up somewhere in finance. I would reckon some sort of, oh, you know, trading position of some sort, I would think.
Right. Okay.
Or the other thing I wanted to do was be a butcher.
Okay.
I figured I'd always have steak. That's what that when I was a little kid, I was like, a butcher, I'll always have steak.
Those are two very different possible paths you could have taken.
That's Robo Dean, right? Fry cook or a brain surgeon, you know?
Right. All right, we'll finish with a couple of recommendations for the listeners. First off, food. Next time they're in Vegas, the one dish at one restaurant someone absolutely has to try is what? And I know you listed a lot of sort of the great bargains, so you maybe it's a bargain one or maybe it's something fancy, but if you're pointing someone in one direction, gotta try this. What is it?
Well, everybody, when they come to Vegas, they like the deal. So I would point to a couple of things in terms of the deal. You know, one would be the $9.99 steak dinner at Ellis Island. You know, it's a full steak dinner with salad and green beans and baked potato, you know, for $9.99. You know, you've got to put $5 through a slot machine, meaning you got to play a buck and a quarter or a video poker machine 4 plays to get that price. Okay. Expected loss,
Right.
0.5 cents.
Right.
You know, that's one. The other would be everyone misses the buffets like crazy. And you know, for me, the best buffet for the money, without question, would be the Palms. Again, especially if you're an LVA member, you get 2 for 1. They've got a $70 lobster, all you can eat lobster, a night, 2 nights a week, Wednesday and Thursday, which you get for half price if you're a member of our thing. So if you're an LVA member, I'd say that. If not, I hate to say it, but the best bargain buffet is South Point. I don't like South Point because they don't like me,
Okay.
but I got to give credit where credit's due. If I was going to talk about one dish, one place to go, I'd try Lotus of Siam. It is just, you know, some say the best Thai in all of the United States. It's over on East Flamingo, across from Silver Sevens Casino, and they've just instituted a happy hour, 5 days a week from 3 to 5, where some of their best dishes are happy hour prices. I just went and checked it out with a friend, and two of us had drinks, and the best things they had was $48.
I have to follow up out of curiosity. Does South Point have reason to not like you? Is there a story there, or do they just not like you for not good reasons?
Here's a story, and it's an amazing story, and it goes back almost 30 years, where there was a guy named, well, no, let's give credit where credit's due here. The Wizard of Oz, Michael
Oh,
Shackelford,
yeah.
came up with a way to quantify a return on slots, which you can never do. You can only quantify the return on video poker because we know there's 52 cards in a deck, and you can see the pay tables, and you know the probabilities, so you can tell what a video poker machine returns. But with slots, you can't tell because they're electronic. Unless you see what are called the par sheets, which have these numbers on them, you can't tell. But he found a hack where on one machine, nickel machines only, a certain machine out of Australia, you could do the quantification. And we ran with that in Las Vegas Advisor, and we printed the results. And at the time, Michael Gaughan, who owns and runs South Point, was owning and running Gold Coast. And Gold Coast, out of 74 casinos, Gold Coast came in second best. So you think he would love that.
Right.
First best was his arch enemy, the Palms across the street. And he never forgave me for writing that. And he's
Wow.
been nothing but a jerk to me and his people forever since then, and I can't imagine it's for any other reason. So anyway,
Wow.
I'm saying it because that's what I believe is true.
All right.
But South Point is a great casino. I gotta say that. Damn
Right.
it, I have to say the dude knows how to run a casino. So go ahead.
Okay, well, hopefully he's listening and you're back in his good graces now.
Yeah, he's giving me one of these with the fingers right now.
Last thing, one more recommendation. A book by, present company excluded in terms of authors. So don't feel any pressure to name mine. Something else, a Huntington Press book, new, old, whatever, that the average listener should definitely be buying a copy of. I'm sure it's hard to choose between all your babies, but give me one I should be ordering.
But we don't want to say the moneymaker effect, huh?
We don't, but you just said it, so well done. That's fine.
The moneymaker effect was one of the best books we ever did that didn't sell. Sorry about
I'd
that.
much rather be a critical darling. No, that's not true. I'd much rather have made money, but it's fine.
In terms of telling people, what to, it kind of depends on what they want to do. Like if you really want to become a blackjack card counter, I would say knock out blackjack without question, because it's a form of counting. It's called the easiest card counting system ever devised, and it truly is. So by Olaf von Kira, a Harvard Smithsonian astrophysicist. Let me say that again.
Wow.
A Harvard Smithsonian astrophysicist, and he came up with the great count. If you want to read a blackjack book for pure fun, there's one called Blackjack Autumn, which is just so good by Barry Metal. And it's about him playing in every casino in Nevada. And he tells his life story as he goes through it. It's really, really good. And if you're video poker, with all the Gene Scott books as good as they are, I think you almost got to start with Million Dollar Blackjack. Excuse me, Million Dollar Video Poker by Bob Danzel.
Okay. All right. We got a few recommendations in there. And I can never keep it straight what the right website to push people toward to find those. Is it LasVegasAdvisor.com or ShopLVA.com, or either one will get them there?
Either one will get them there, but yeah, go to LasVegasAdvisor.com, and most of the site. After years of people just taking advantage of everything we had for nothing, but for free, is paywalled. All right, so it's $3 a month to go in, but you can do it for 1 month and you can read everything that we've ever done in there. If you want the coupon book, it's $50, but there's still we have a lot of free stuff too. So go to LasVegasAdvisor.com, and of course the store is free because we want people to buy things.
Right. All right. Excellent. So yeah, hopefully everyone will check all that out. Appreciate all your insights. Again, it's Elvis 1A, Anthony Curtis 1B for me when it comes to Vegas. Thanks for coming on Low Rollers, Anthony.
High praise. Thank you very much.
Okay, my thanks again to Anthony. I've known him for almost 20 years now, and lots of people I know call him Kurt, not Anthony, but for some reason I've never felt comfortable joining in and calling him Kurt. So he's Anthony to me, and he was a great guest. That was a fun chat. I still can't get over $155 for two carafes of iced tea. I may never get over that. Anyway, time for a quick gambling anecdote to end the show. Or actually, a no gambling anecdote. I was on the road last weekend. There was a celebration at my alma mater of 130 years of Jewish life at Brown University. And that isn't necessarily something I would have attended. I might not have even known about it, actually. But my mother, who is also a Brown alum, has been looking forward to this celebration for months, and she's 80 years old, and we absolutely do not permit her to make drives that long by herself. And I generally don't like the idea of her trying to get from place to place without an assistant on hand, so I went with her for the weekend and acted as her chauffeur and the person who helps her locate her phone when, every 45 seconds, she asks where her phone is. It was a nice weekend. I saw a few old friends and relatives, met a lot of interesting people, but it also served as a perhaps needed online gambling detox weekend. Now, yes, they do have online sports betting and online casino in Rhode Island, but not on the apps I use. It's a monopoly state, and I wasn't going to set up a new account just to place a few bets or play some blackjack. Did I build a few DFS lineups because my DraftKings DFS account works in Rhode Island? Sure. But otherwise, for 2.5 days, no online gambling. And, yeah, there's a chance those were going to be the 2.5 luckiest days of my life, and I was going to hit a FanDuel jackpot or win a PokerStars spin and go at the highest prize denomination, and I missed that chance. But more likely, I was going to play poker for an hour or two or three and play a half hour of online slots each day, chasing the daily promos and bonuses, and I was going to make a bunch of $5 and $10 football bets and then feel compelled to watch 15 hours of football on Sunday. And there's nothing wrong with any of that. But it was probably good to have a forced weekend off. This isn't about responsible gambling. Listeners know, if anything, I'm too responsible of a gambler. This is about maintaining some perspective and some life balance. So I'm not really offering advice. I'm not really trying to convince anyone to take a weekend off. I'm just saying that there is some upside to deciding, I'm not going to gamble today. I'm not going to watch football today. I'm going to live life and see people and go places, and I'll get back to chasing my bonuses in a day or two. That's all. I have no deep thoughts to impart, just a fairly shallow thought, but hopefully it's a shallow thought you can use. Until next week, this has been Low Rollers, Small Stakes, and Hot Takes.